This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this episode of In the Black. Very pumped for this episode. I did post about it on my story when we recorded it. Luke, who is on the show today, Luke Wanlau, has been a friend of mine for a very long time. I first trained him at my first CrossFit gym, CrossFit Active, in 2012. So he came to me. He was an ex-bodybuilder. You kind of hear about it, the story in this podcast. But he was like, hey, I'm looking to kind of get better at the sport and, you know, you're pretty good and can you coach me? And yes, so I did some PTs with him, got to know his family a bit, did some PTs with his wife, and we just stayed in touch ever since. Obviously, our paths kind of diverted, and he's a lawyer and he's doing some business stuff, and he goes into all his story here, but then essentially we opened our own gym, we opened Creech Fitness, and then we reconnected later just on some business stuff and just some meetings. And, you know, in some ways he's always been a bit of an inspiration slash very, very haphazard sort of mentor in some ways, and just provided some guidance and some insights into the industry. And now he's put himself in a position to make a play for being what I would say probably one of the most successful fitness entrepreneurs in Australia of all time. Yeah, he's going to he's set himself up for something huge here. So he's the master franchise owner of Anytime Fitness Asia. Mm. Obviously, if you think of the Asian market, it is one of the
just
biggest.
Not, it's really just not including China.
And India.
Yeah, and India.
Yeah. And so if you think about that, obviously the growth opportunity is huge. It's a massive population. Yes, a lot of it is in poverty. But if you think about the opportunity just from the price point, you know, it's the lowest end of the market, which is a perfect fit for their economy. Anytime Fitness, I think they've got 750 or something now, and you know the goal is to open thousands of them. But we'll go into all the details of the podcast. But that's a bit of background on Luke. Luke's a good friend, and this is definitely an amazing story. And it really put together some pieces in my mind about Luke's journey, which I didn't know, and kind of how he started. So
also for me, it just gave me insight into what it's like to own an Anytime Fitness gym, or yes, like own a franchise Globo gym. I always kind of wondered, oh, how much money do they make, or like how much does it cost? How hard is it to get the members? And it's good insight into that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So before we jump into the episode, guys, supporting our businesses every single week is a platform that honestly we could not run Creature how we run it. It would take way more time. I don't probably take somewhere between 4 to 6 times the amount of time of admin work.
No, the gym would go broke if we didn't have it.
Oh, you reckon?
Yeah, we're having to pay someone to spend that long writing
that's
programs.
True. That's true. Yeah, so True Coach is a platform that we use to write and share and duplicate and improve our programming system. We're a very coach-heavy gym. We're a very programming-heavy gym for our clients. That's why they pay a premium. And True Coach is the platform that we use to deliver their training to them. It's great because obviously we can add videos in there as well, so they can preview their training a week ahead and look at all the different movements and stuff. And it just makes them more independent as well. It means that when they travel, when they're away from the gym, we can still program workouts for them. They're used to using an app. We can put the videos in there as well. It's not only a amazing service for your clients, but it's also just a great retention tool as well in the long term. So if you struggle with retention, improving your service, your delivery can definitely help with that. So True Coach is definitely that platform. If you go to truecoach.co/MMP, you will get a free 14-day trial and then a discount off your next month. Of course, the link to that is in the description of this episode as well. Guys, we're very excited to announce this. MPE have launched a new program. Now, one of the problems with business coaching, fitness business coaching, is commitment, right? You don't want to commit all this time. You don't want to sign a 12-month contract. You don't want to outlay $15,000 or whatever it is.
Particularly now, you don't even know like what's going to happen in the world in a year's time.
Of course. But you know you need help. You know that there are some gaps in your business. You probably even feel like maybe you start coaching programs, you get a lot of value from them in the beginning, and then sort of the last back end of the coaching program, you feel like, oh, well, I've committed, I've signed this contract, I can't break the contract, and I don't want to pay all this money for stuff that I'm not getting value for, which is fair. So they've created this new product. It's called the MPE Stimulus Package. They're launching it with just 50 gyms worldwide. So they're not going to accept every gym. The only gyms that they'll be accepting are people that do have quite a solid business, are very committed to the cause, aren't kind of, you know, half in, half out with their business at the moment. They really want to make it work. And what it is, it's a 90-day program. So it's just a one-off cost. You run all their, the onboarding basically?
Yeah, it's really like the big rock that everyone that we've done in the past, that is just like, hey, every gym needs this, and 95% chance, I can tell you, you're not doing it.
Right.
You know, if you were not on this coaching program.
Right. So, you can make huge leaps and bounds. I mean, this is really like the 80-20 of that coaching program,
right? Yeah, this is the 80-20.
Yeah, the 80% of the work, the 20% of the work is going to get 80% of the results. So
it sets up your sales system, your finance system, your retention system, and your marketing system.
And you can just build from there. And there's no long-term commitment. So, it's amazing. You guys can go to the link, which is in the description of this episode, the MPE stimulus package to apply to see if you can qualify for one of those 50 gyms to get it. Okay, guys, very excited for this episode with Luke. If you have any questions at the end, we do talk about some stuff, please shoot us a message. All right, guys, here we are with Luke Kwanlau. All right, My Miles Project, welcome back to another episode of In the Black. Today, actually, we were discussing before this, Raph and I, pretty much the most successful fitness entrepreneur that we know personally, we have sitting across from us, Luke. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
So, I want to get into your businesses and the move you just made recently, which is pretty exciting. But we can talk about how we met each other, but let's go back before that. How did you, like, who are you? Where'd you grow up? Like, what's your story? How'd you get to this point?
Yeah. Well, it's a long-winded question, potentially with a long-winded answer, but...
That's what a podcast is for.
Yeah. Where do I start? So, born here in Paddington.
Yeah.
Born in the East. Raised in Western Sydney. Dad headed up Blacktown Hospital. So, we had a little cottage in the kind of precinct of Blacktown Hospital. So, grew up there for most of primary school.
Dad was a doctor?
Dad was a neurosurgeon.
Oh, actually. Wow. Cool.
Yeah, Dad was a neurosurgeon, headed up Blacktown, met my mum as a nurse in Blacktown.
Mm. Yeah, right.
And my brother and I were subsequently born, as it turned out. Moved to northwest Sydney, so Kellyville.
Yeah.
Got sent to boarding school, St. Joseph's College in Hunters Hill, for a large part of high school. And worked in IT following high school. Didn't do amazingly well in high school. Actually, that's probably not accurate. I did appalling in high school. I failed high school.
Oh, really?
Yes. Like,
why is that?
Unequivocally failed high school. I mean, the sob story is parents divorced, 93, went off the rails, needed a bit of attention, kind of rebelled.
Mm.
But, you know, still on me. You know, choices are made on my part. And ended up in IT sales after doing a kind of like a diploma in IT in a private college, or through a private college. And fell in love with selling, actually. So my foray into business was a telemarketing gig in Surrey Hills, across the road from, I think, Strawberry Hills Hotel, I think it was called.
That's why you're so comfortable with the headset.
Yes.
Like, it just works. I'm having nostalgia right now from making those 100 calls per hour.
Yeah.
But I used to sell Royal Life Saving Society tickets to people at 9:30 at night, and I'd get paid $13 an hour, and I'd get an extra $2 if I managed to make that sale with a credit card. And I didn't love the job, but I was very comfortable speaking to people and selling and just knocking on doors without any shame. So I think that part of my career, I didn't know it at the time, but it paid dividends moving forward in the ability to kind of have conversations, uncomfortable conversations, with a core objective of selling or closing, right? Mm. So I ended up getting a better job, moved on from telemarketing in Surrey Hills to a company called IBM. I was a sales support rep at their office in West Pennant Hills. And really kind of climbed the ranks in the IT arena, if you like. So I moved on to Compaq. That got bought out by Hewlett Packard in 2001. I was doing a lot of channel sales, which in IT speak basically means that I was helping HP resellers sell their equipment to businesses.
Okay.
I was responsible for South Australia and New South Wales. And it was quite a rapid journey. I was in business class flights at the age of 21 to Adelaide, kind of client meets and greets in Barossa Valley, and way out of my element. I didn't really know even how to, you know, which pieces of cutlery to pick up, you know, at some of these dinners.
I still don't.
Dad put a lot of pressure on me to basically follow in his footsteps to a certain extent, to become a professional.
Mm.
So there was an immense amount of pressure to become an accountant, doctor, lawyer. And I'd studied legal studies, did some work experience in year 10 at a law firm. So I did want to become a lawyer, but got nowhere near the marks to do so.
Yeah.
But long story short, in relation to becoming a lawyer, I applied for a law degree at Bond University because the word on the street was that applications were a little less rigorous in terms of entry requirements. So I applied with my diploma in IT in hand and references from everyone I knew that was remotely famous or important in the world. And the dean of the law school said no. He said, you don't have the UAI to get in, nor do you have any tertiary qualifications with a sufficient nexus to get in. And I basically begged. I basically said, I will work my butt off if you let him into this law school, and you won't regret it. And I mean, that wasn't the pitch. It was much more kind of long-winded than that.
Sure.
But the school ended up saying, we'll let you in on a provisionary basis.
Wow.
We'll let you in, Mr. Guanlao, if you achieve a distinction average in your first semester.
Hmm.
And at that point, my mum said, look, don't worry about it. stay at HP. Just, you know, you're making some good money.
Mm.
You're on a six-figure salary. Mm. And I bought my first car at that point. I had an investment property at the age of 22.
Mm.
And life was pretty good financially. But I said, no. You know, the ego kicked in.
Make dad proud.
I was like, I've got to make dad proud. But also I wanted to prove it to myself. Like, I wasn't a bum.
Yeah.
Right. So I got into the first semester. I had no idea what I'd got myself into. I was in the library 9 hours a day.
Yeah.
Literally 9 hours a day, because I wasn't naturally academic. I just thought, like, if I work harder than everyone else, I'll get through this. So 9 hours a day, took a break, obviously, to eat, to go to the bathroom, and I fell in love with this thing called the gym. I was like, I need to go somewhere. All my friends are going to the pub, hanging out with these really good-looking Swedish and Scandinavian girls. I thought, like, I don't want to do that. I was in a relationship at the time. So I thought, I'll go to this place called the Bond University Gym. Had no idea how to use the equipment. I just saw this thing, which was called a preacher curl machine.
Yeah.
And I was like, that looks like, I looked at the little diagram and it showed that it was, you know, focused on your biceps. I thought, well, that's what I want to focus
on. That's the one we need.
That's the machine.
Found it.
And I had spent a lot of my first maybe 3 months just doing bicep curls. No word of a lie.
Nothing else.
Just I would go to the one machine for a good half an hour. I wasn't sure about rep range. I wasn't sure about sets.
That's so good.
And, one machine. And my arms got disproportionately huge.
That is classic. Right? Fuck, yeah. That is a good story.
And then I eventually moved on to split system worked out. There was this thing called...
Triceps.
Yeah. Push, pull, chest buys. And I got into that gym culture and I loved it. When I wasn't studying, eating, or doing kind of, you know, things that involved going to the bathroom and so forth, I went to the gym.
Mm.
I loved it. Mm. I ended up getting a separate gym membership with Fitness First. And so I go circling back to the law school story. I ended up getting 76, which was 1% above a distinction average.
And nice.
The dean of the law school was, you know, Mr. Guanlao, welcome to the Bond University Law School.
Nice.
Ended up graduating with honors, kept that same system, biceps got even bigger, got a little bit smarter as well, and I ended up getting an offer from Intrelison, so Australia's largest law firm, in my penultimate year of university, based on the Gold Coast, and I joined their commercial disputes team. So I became a lawyer formally in 2006 after finishing my PLT, and spent probably about 5 years in private practice. I stayed at Minterellis and moved to a mid-tier firm in Sydney called Thompson Playford. After Thompson Playford, I kind of spent a lot of time in-house. During my in-house time, I invested in a thing called Anytime Fitness.
Yeah.
So my brother and I owned a couple of properties in Western Sydney. Mm-hmm. We managed to sell those properties for a decent profit after we got some DA approval to turn them to townhouses. Didn't have enough money to build, so we had the opportunity to sell.
Mm.
So we decided to sell the properties, made a decent amount of cash. And at that point in time, we were looking for something to invest in that allowed us to sustain our jobs. He was in IT, I was a lawyer. I didn't want to give up my legal career. And we actually looked at a brand called Jets. At that point in time, and met with the franchise sales people and their business development team.
Which is like a low-end 24-hour fitness gym.
Say that again, sorry?
That's just like a low-end 24-hour fitness gym, right? Like low-end price.
Budget price.
Yeah.
But I love the model.
Yeah.
Because it was a gym that you could put a manager in after, obviously, you got it up and running. And you could still keep your 9-to-5.
Hmm.
And that was the goal. It was like, I want to keep my job, but I want to invest in something that I'm passionate about. And I love the gym. I love the preacher curl. At that point in time, my fitness had kind of, you know, increased a little bit in terms of knowledge. I'd moved on to, you know, triceps and a few other things like pull-ups. And
not legs, though.
No legs yet. I'll come to that story when I met Lachlan Rouston at CrossFit Active. And so we looked at Jets, and then I had a friend working at Anytime Fitness head office who said, listen, look, I heard you're looking at Jets. Why didn't you come and chat to us? And I met with the business development team or the franchise sales team at Anytime Fitness, and I was sold. I love the equipment. Their gyms had Live Fitness, Live Hammer Strength, all pre-core. I feel like that equipment was a bit of a standard than what was being offered at Jets specifically. And I just felt like I gelled with the brand. The guys were pretty entrepreneurial, pretty cool. Did some research on the founders, Chuck Runyon and Dave Mortensen, who I eventually met several years later. And I just felt like my personality profile and kind of what I was about just gelled better with that culture of that company.
So important. Yeah.
So important.
It's everything. Yeah.
And what do you think Anytime is doing differently? Because obviously Anytime has, seems like if just from an outside perspective, they have squashed a lot of the other 24-hour offerings, at least in Australia or in New South Wales. Do you think it's just the equipment or what do you think they're doing different?
I think a couple of things. One, they had a fantastic franchise sales team, right? Because, I mean, there's the gym component, which is the offering.
Yes.
But there's the business model around franchising. So the people that own, the group that own, Collective Illness Group is their name, they're amazing at franchising. And that's obviously an industry in itself, separate from the offering. The offering is the gym, franchising the industry. They're amazing franchisors. So I think understanding how to sell a franchise is one thing, but also understanding how to support a franchisee is another. I think they do that really well. And a lot of people think that when you buy a franchise, you open your door, you know, people just start, you know, come in. Not the case.
Mm.
You've got to market, as you guys know, obviously with Creature Fitness, you've got to market at multiple levels, be it community, social media, above the line, below the line. But at the same time, there's this thing called operational excellence. How do you actually operate this gym? What are you doing end to end from the moment you open your doors to the moment you close? And what CWG were good at, or Anytime Fitness Australia, were just teaching people, coaching people that never run a business before, but had enough cash to invest in one, how to run it properly. And I thought that was cool because, you know, being a lawyer, you know, IT sales, telemarketer, I've never run a small business.
Yeah.
So I was really cutting my teeth on the business world at that point. So ended up going with Anytime. Bought a territory called Glendenning.
What year was this?
This was 2010, from memory.
Okay.
Yeah. So coming up to a decade now. And it was in Western Sydney where I grew up. So I was very familiar with the community. I knew the personality, well, not the personality profiles, but the member demographic in that area quite well.
Yep.
And head office were like, look, good choice, fantastic. It's good that you've got an affinity with the area. And I found a warehouse, 725 square meter warehouse. And I was like, this is my premises.
Mm.
And they're like, look, it's too big. We don't recommend, you know, going with something this big. We recommend convenience. That's what our model's about. Coming back to Ralph's question, it's also about convenience, community, and being attached to things or amenities where people go to visit, right? Be it a Woolies or Coles, etc.
Mm.
And I really pushed for it because it was cheaper rent, to be frank. Mm. And some of these other tenancies next to Woolies were nearly three times, right?
Yeah.
They were offering, I think, $8K a month for this side.
Yeah, right.
And we ended up proceeding. And the beauty about the Anytime model, which maybe people don't realize, is that you can sell memberships before you open your door. So we run this thing called a pre-sale campaign for 8 weeks. You'd lease a space, be in a neighboring shopping center or council grounds, be in a park or what have you. And you can sell memberships. So at that point in time, I was selling...
It's like a pop-up shop.
Pop-up stand, Anytime Fitness banner, some balloons. And it was an opportunity to really let people that wanted to be in the gym, become a member of the gym, come in at what we call a foundation price. So I was selling gym memberships at that point in time. I think the rack rate for a pre-sale campaign was $39.95 a month, right?
Yep.
Pretty cheap.
It's about $10 a week.
Yeah.
Less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we ended up selling over 400 before we opened our doors.
Wow. Were you doing those sales or did you get
I was. Sales yeah. Well, on the weekends I was. I was working at Governor Macquarie Tower in Sydney CBD at the time as an associate general counsel and I'd finish work at 6. And I'd drive to Plumpton Marketplace, which is about a 45-minute drive down the M2, Monday to Friday every night for 8 weeks. I couldn't afford to lease inside the shopping mall, so I rented a car space in the car park. Had a Bunnings light, an umbrella for the rain. We had these two trolleys that kind of sectioned off some of the more colorful characters that you would come across in that area.
I'm sure.
And we sold over 400 memberships, and which meant we broke even on day one, and we received full payback. So return of the full investment in 9 months.
Wow.
Amazing.
And we invested just shy of $500,000.
That's awesome.
And I thought to myself, well, there's something special about this.
Mm.
So we bought another one. We bought another one in a neighboring suburb called Mount Druitt. Equally as colorful, but a lot of respect for the people in the area. The appetite for fitness in the area is so high. And
oh, really?
Our numbers reflect it, yeah. So Glendenning, the first club, at one point had over 2,000 members.
Wow.
One of the highest revenue-generating gyms in Australia at one point. No longer the case because we've got a lot. But yeah, so I mean, that's quite a long journey. So
I didn't know all that.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. So we ended up doing two gyms in Sydney. And I probably should have bought more in hindsight, but I was still a little bit nervous. And at the point in time, I was still working as a lawyer. And I said to myself, it's time. It's time to quit the 9-to-5.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to quit the corporate world and double down on this amazing thing called fitness entrepreneurship. And I said to my wife at the time, I said, I want to start my own company and I'm going to call it something inspirational, something that's something to do with social impact, something that's got something to do with doing better in the world, and it's righteous and morally correct. So we came up with one word that really encapsulated all of that, and it was good. The word was good. And obviously there was a financial economic element to what we were doing as well, so the word capital came involved. So our company was called Good Capital, or technically the Good Capital Group, and it was a holding company for really a platform that we wanted to create to invest in health and wellness businesses and also professional services businesses to still keep that nexus with my legal career. So we bought a small little law firm called Sydney Property Conveyancing in 2014.
Okay, so that, yep, that's where that comes in.
Yeah, yeah, so I quit my job, started a little law firm called Tenio Legal, which was just me, unrestricted practicing certificate, Luke, you know, taking on the world, bought Sydney Property Conveyancing as a bolt-on to that business. And then we made several other investments in the health and wellness space as well. So we invested in a physio slash exercise physiology practice. We started a bookkeeping practice as well called Goodkeeper. We started a recruitment firm 4 years ago called EG Consulting, and also a master franchisor business called Cryoclinics Australia. Whilst all that was happening, we also bought rights to, or some master franchisee rights in the Philippines and Malaysia. And we really expanded our operational know-how within Intel Fitness by buying more gyms in Asia as well.
Yeah.
And that's probably another kind of chapter, but just really quickly, how that worked was I said to my wife, let's just buy one gym. So it's our third gym in the Philippines, Australian-born Filipino. We thought we'd, you know, keep the connection with our motherland.
Can you speak Filipino?
Unfortunately, no.
Oh, that's like me. What? I can't speak any Chinese.
Yeah, it's, I want to though. I want to learn.
Me too.
But Itzy can speak fluent Tagalog, which is great, and Spanish. So it was great having her with me in the business, which was fun. So we went over. We did a bit of a reconnaissance. We wanted to buy one club. Met with the CEO and the regional agent there, Johannes Radzma. And long story short, rather than buying one gym, we struck a deal where we're in partnership. So we struck a partnership agreement whereby collectively as a trio, we would grow the region. In my case, I'd focus on more provincial regions, while Johannes kind of focused on kind of metro areas. And I realized very quickly that I'd bought myself rights to become a franchisor. I was like, this is pretty cool to step up my career. It's my first foray into franchising as opposed to just franchise operations. Whilst Good Capital was kicking goals in Australia, gyms are going well, law firms are going well, every business we touch was going really well. And I was playing more of an advisory role, right? So I kind of looked at myself as a mini boutique quasi private equity firm, just at a really, really low level, just touching businesses that had synergies with myself and what I was looking to achieve, whilst expanding geographically into Asia. So what I quickly realized is that I had rights to sell these gyms, but no one wanted to buy them. Every prospect I spoke to in Asia was like, this is a great model, but you know, I'll probably pass. But when I spoke to my friends in Australia about what I was doing, eyes would light up. It's like, wow, I can get into what you're into, but I don't have to run it. And I was like, well, hold on. You may have to run it, but maybe I can kind of work out a model where, you know, I'll run it for you. And that's where the managed services business was born. A lot of people wanted to give me money to say, listen, look, I want to own a gym with you because I know what you've done with the Western Sydney gyms. You've done an amazing job, right? The revenues were excessive at $1 million. EBITDA was excessive 40%. And all we were trying to do was replicate that same structure in Asia. That's all we were doing. So a good friend of mine, younger brother of a very close friend of mine said, Luke, I will do three gyms with you. It's my first franchise sale in the history of my franchising career. And we bought three together in a city in the Philippines called Cebu. And similar to the Glendenning story, we just mapped out and copied it end to end. We pre-sold for 8 weeks. We marketed as hard as possible on social media. And this time we sold 647 memberships in that same period. Broke even on day one. Payback took a little bit longer. We achieved payback in around a 2-year period. But the good news is we're in a third world country.
Yeah.
We brought over a business model that was born out of Minneapolis in 2002. We cut our teeth on the operational know-how in Sydney over the course of the previous 5 years. And we did it. We're like, this model is proven. That 3-club deal snowballed into 10. The 10 snowballed into 20. My investor consortium went from one person to 26 today. So we run a business which is kind of 3-prong. We build and operate gyms. So we receive dividend income from these gyms. We run a managed services business on behalf of investors who want to invest in the gyms. And in addition to that, we're also, at this point in time, we are the master franchisee, but at that point in time, we're only a sub-master franchisee. So we took a portion of royalties as well. And life was really good. Life was amazing. We got to by the end of 2019, we were over 60 gyms in three countries, two law firms, a bookkeeping practice, a master franchise or business in the cryotherapy space, a recruitment firm, and, you know, husband to a beautiful wife and three kids under seven. Life's great.
Mm.
I had aspirations to do more, though, and I'm sure you guys can relate to this. I was at a point in my time where I'm like, I've cut my teeth. I've got some operational experience, got some strong skill sets, both kind of corporate, business development, legal, plus kind of small business entrepreneurship, plus franchising in Asia. I wanted to become the master franchisee. I wanted to be the master franchisee for any time. I'd met Chuck and Dave, the founders, several times. They're such motivational guys. Their story as well is amazing. You should read their book. They're really good guys in terms of just showing entrepreneurs that if you've got the grit, the tenacity, the know-how, and the acumen, right, you can achieve amazing things. So I knocked on the door of the CEO of Anytime Fitness Asia, and I said, I'd love to buy into your business, several times. And each time I was rejected, very respectfully, of course, and politely, I was always rejected. So I said to, his name is Maurice Levine. I hope he listens to this because this is a great story. I said, Maurice, that's cool. I get it, but I want to do more. So I want to go shopping. I'm going to go to Ursa this year in 2019, which is the largest a North American fitness conference, or arguably globally, in San Diego, March 2019. And I was just shopping for master franchise licenses that were obviously not in conflict with any time that I could bring back to Asia so I could become a master franchisee. Because I knew I could do it. I understand franchise operations. I understand franchise support. I knew how to sell really well. And I loved connecting with people. I love looking small business owners in the eyes and saying, I can help you achieve your success. Not because I've got this job and I'm a franchise house person, because I did it. I started my first business in 2010 and I've been on that journey.
So for people that are confused, a master franchisor, it's the person that purchases like a whole region, usually a very large region, and then is selling the individual gyms to new franchisee owners. And then you take a clip of, I guess, their earnings or their a yearly subscription fee.
Yeah, in a nutshell, I mean, that's probably a decent summary. Yeah, so you buy rights to a region. In our case, we've got rights to eight countries, or seven countries specifically, because Hong Kong and Macau are part of China. And yeah, so you receive a royalty shared with the master franchisor, in our case, Minneapolis. And obviously, your obligations are support, operations, legal, HR, like no different to any other kind of multinational business. So going back to San Diego, Maurice was there as well. Everyone goes to this conference, and he tapped me on the shoulder and said, we should catch up for a beer. Love to. And that night, he said, look, I'm ready to sell. I thought, oh, fantastic. I'm going to cancel my meetings with all these other kind of master franchisors in San Diego. And I knew the price wouldn't be cheap. And I said to Maurice, I want to do this, but I need some time to get the deal together, to structure the deal. So this was March 2019. And fast forwarding to, I guess, the formulation, I very quickly realized that I probably couldn't do it on my own. So I kind of looked at specific countries that perhaps I could really dabble in versus the entire continent, because he had rights to all of Asia, except for Japan, India, and China. And so I thought I'd make a play at just Malaysia and Singapore with another partner. And we quickly realized that wasn't of interest to the seller, to Maurice. So we kind of had to band together and work out what we would do in terms of a capital raise for the entire continent. And basically the three largest sub-master franchisees in Asia, three people, it's myself, a gentleman by the name of Johannes Radzema, who I'd mentioned earlier, and Andrea Bell, she headed up Singapore. We decided to merge our businesses together. Together, we were stronger in terms of synergies. Like, it was an identical business model. We all had gyms. We all had managed services businesses. And we all had master franchise rights. So it just made sense to merge, even if we didn't buy the entire master franchise business. But we still wanted to. So we decided to merge. We had a really in-depth discussion on valuation, which was robust, and rightfully so. You know, everyone was kind of talking about what their value was, not just in terms of monetary value, but also value in terms of skill set, know-how, and what they were going to do with the business. And then we basically started spruiking the business in front of several private equity firms because we didn't have enough cash on our own. So we ended up with two. One was called Mizuho Asia Partners, or Exacta Capital Partners, I think their legal entity name is. And they're almost like an offshoot, if you like, an affiliate brand of Mizuho Bank in Japan. And another group who have got a HQ here in Sydney called Aura Group. Good friends of mine as well. We've done some business together in the past. I've known them for several years. And they were very keen on the business. And I think the guys, especially at Aura, had watched me grow kind of since 2012, 2013, when we'd met. So they knew that journey. They knew what, you know, everything I had achieved. So they were in. We had two firms that were like, we're going to cut you a check for X and Y. But we're still a little bit short. So we ended up speaking to several banks to get some debt on. So the deal structure was private equity plus some debt. And we spoke to Citibank, HSBC, and a Japanese investment bank called Risa Partners. And we ended up going to Risa for several reasons, which we don't need to get into. It's a lot of technical kind of financial vernacular, which for the most part's over my head anyway. And
that's saying something.
What's that, sorry?
I said, that's really saying something. Yeah. It's over your head.
So we got to Christmas and we're like, okay, we're about to do the deal. The goal was to sign on New Year's Eve. And it got pushed back to January for various reasons. And then January hit and there was this this thing called COVID-19 that was just being showered across every media outlet in Asia. And people started getting nervous. People started saying to themselves, well, even us, right? Do we want to do this? Do we want to buy a business that potentially may be directly impacted by this pandemic? And the general consensus was that we were so emotionally and financially committed to the deal that it made sense to still proceed, especially because the robustness of the model, i.e. the recurring revenue streams, the long-term franchise agreement terms, be it 6+6, and obviously the longer, I shouldn't say the longer, but the tenure of the master franchise contract as well, was long enough to say, well, you know, when you look at similar situations of the past, how long do they take to subside or dissipate or for us to find a vaccination or a cure for? And typically it's around 2 to 3 years. So we thought that was long enough for us to say we can recover. But further to that, we also had to rejig our cash flow.
Yes.
Really understand what the impact was going to be on the business, were our cash reserves going into the business going to be enough to sustain and weather that storm. And thankfully, you know, the guys from Aura, our private equity firm in Mizuho, or Exacta Capital Partners, they were able to work that out probably within a day. The financial firepower coming out of these private equity firms was nothing short of amazing. So yeah, for us as operational founders, like you guys, like that's not our wheelhouse, right? Mm. We don't know how to run these kind of in-depth financial models. And they did it very quickly. And it gave us an insight as to their value add, for one, but also to how do we have to adjust this deal for it to work? Because what was going to land and be inked in December 2019 wasn't going to be the same deal that was inked in May 2020, right? So we proceeded. We signed the deal. Unfortunately, I'm not sure if you guys have seen a movie called Limitless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you found the drug.
Well, no, we didn't find the drug, but the... I mean, that would be different. That'd be great.
Yeah, yeah, right? I'll be like, no, I'll have some right now. I'm not going to hesitate.
Well, there was a scene in that movie where they lined up all the contracts for the merger and there was about 27 piles. And to be honest, our deal wasn't too dissimilar.
Right.
We had a tripartite merger with three entities. We had regional agent contracts. We had employment contracts. We had termination deeds. We had share purchase agreements. We had loan agreements, facility agreements, share pledges. There was literally about, from memory, at least 17 documents with, you know, decent thickness, right? Yeah. So we're not talking about 2-3 pages.
Yeah, like if you rolled it up and hit someone, it would hurt.
It would hurt. Yeah. It would definitely hurt.
Like a full newspaper.
Exactly. Exactly. So I was picturing a signing ceremony akin to Limitless. Everyone lined up, lawyers on one side, but we did it via DocuSign, via Zoom.
Damn.
So it just felt weird. Like the entire execution process. Yeah.
Welcome to 2020.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Virtual signing. So sorry guys, that was a really long-winded
answer.
But we're co-owners of technically the fastest growing anytime fitness master license globally. And very proud to be, you know, associated with a brand. I'll say this to Chuck and Dave, they were here right now. The founders of the brand, it changed my life. Gave me insight to what I was capable of and I didn't know what I was capable of at the time. And that was being an amazing business person. But more importantly, sharing that knowledge and know-how with people that I care about and people within our network to for them to leverage that success as well. So it's a great platform.
Where does Anytime rank? Because Lachlan and I just did an episode recently on like our top fitness entrepreneurs. Anytime wasn't in the list. Where would you say it ranks in terms of fitness businesses in the world?
Well, I think going back to distinguishing between a franchising industry and a fitness business. So Entrepreneur Magazine rated Anytime number one for at least 5 years, I think from 2013 onwards, as the number one franchising brand.
Of any franchise?
Of any franchise globally.
McDonald's.
Subway.
Everything. Yeah.
Trumps them all.
Yeah, right.
So that's a stat that you could probably look up. And again, it may not be front of mind because it does focus on the franchising sector.
Yes.
And again, it's important to understand again the offering versus the industry.
Yeah, different metrics. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
So number one, I'd say. Number one from a franchising perspective. And from a fitness business perspective, man, that's such a hard question to answer, right? There were so many different metrics, criteria. And from a member's perspective, there are so many different wants and wishes when you attend a fitness business. So quite challenging to answer.
Okay, I have so many follow-up questions to this thing. So where I wanted to start was from an operational perspective, there's so much, I mean, speaking as a gym owner, because we're quite involved in the day-to-day, you can't be, it's impossible, right? You have all these locations or whatever. So in order for that machine to work, hiring is like one of the most important jobs, getting the right people in the right positions, making sure they understand their role, making sure they do it correctly. What philosophies do you have? What maybe secret sauce that you want to disclose do you have around hiring, making sure that the whole machine works throughout all your companies? I'm sure there's like a similar philosophy you follow, because if you're sitting on top of the whole thing, you got to have an amazing team underneath you, right?
Yep.
So what is it that works?
Yeah, that's a good question. I recently finished reading a book called Principles by Ray Dalio.
Yeah.
Big fan. Fund manager from New York. Bridgewater, I think his company is called.
Yep.
He talks about two things when it comes to hiring. He talks about attitude and capability. Full admission on my side, I, for a long part of my career, focused purely on attitude. And I think for me, I was partial to that because I liked connecting with my staff. Yes, I'm technical from a legal perspective. Yes, I'm technical to a certain extent in terms of business. But business for me has been so enjoyable when I've enjoyed spending time with the people I'm working with or next to.
Yeah.
So I put a huge emphasis on attitude. And for the most part, as a small business owner, when you're looking at maybe three or four businesses, it will get you by. Having people with the right tenacity and grit will get you by. When you're stepping up into different leagues, when you're stepping up into, be it further units, further businesses in the same location, be it Sydney or otherwise, or geographically, you spread across multiple countries, that's when, for me, the capability really comes in. And getting people on board that have got both the right tenacity, the right passion, the right grit, the right level of initiative, the right level of thinking outside the box, plus the skill set. And skill set is such a subjective term, right? It could be anything from tertiary qualifications in respect of, say, finance, engineering, mathematics, or it could be school of hard knocks, practical training you've received on the job. For me, the latter was more important. Getting people in the business that experience running small businesses in franchising or basically just industry. So I guess to answer your question, Lockie, I think a couple of things. Hire based on both of those and provide them with the frameworks and how you manage. And the beauty about how we managed our business from 2011 till now is that we documented everything. A lot of entrepreneurs would start businesses and think, well, sell, market, close, look at my P&L, manage that, see what I can tweak to kind of work out what those leverage points are to get that growth. But not many entrepreneurs document enough. Documenting your processes end to end, be it on a platform, be it Basecamp, be it Trello, it's so important. And I think once you've got those frameworks, training your staff once they come on board is a lot easier, and expectation as well. So you'd think being a lawyer and having a high attention to detail, I'm a micromanager. I'm actually not. My style has been more throw you in the deep end, see how far you swim, see how long it takes for you to sink, and then come in coach and mentor. For me, again, that's probably more partisan to attitude. Whereas now, we are definitely applying the slow to hire, quick to fire approach. Whereas before, it was like, you're cool, we get along, you got the right attitude, like come into the business.
Mm-hmm.
So to be more structured with the answer, we wanted to make sure we had general managers or leaders, if you like, in each of the functions of our businesses and countries, and make sure they had the right support from a leadership, people, and culture perspective, but also the know-how to do the work. I think it's important to get guys that are doers, but also are open to that advice on, well, how do I run this business? How do I make sure that when Raf gets out of bed in the morning and he's about to take on a pre-sale to try and sell 600 memberships of the course in the next 8 weeks, he's got the right internal motivation. And I feel like that for me has been, you mean, secret sauce, if you like, is not necessarily secret, but a focus that's paid us dividends. Focus less on technical aptitude, especially in the fitness space, and focus more on how do you drive and harness the right behavior of an individual to ensure they stay connected with you, they believe in your journey, they believe in your business, and there are commensurate rewards and recognition that go with that effort. That for me has been a nice principle across the, I guess, my journey as an entrepreneur.
Mm. And have you been yourself heavily involved in the recruitment process? Like, have you been sitting across the table from the people that you're hiring? Obviously, you can't do it for all of it, like maybe not trainers and stuff like that, but for the key roles in your businesses, are you quite involved?
Definitely, yeah. So probably too involved. Because I, as part of my role as Group CEO of Inspire Brands Asia, which is the holding company that owns Anytime Fitness Asia now, so I have a group CFO that reports to me, head of HR, and I've got two separate heads of business, a CEO of Anytime Fitness Asia and a managing director for IBC, which is our managed services business. Every kind of key report to them, I'd love to be involved in. I have been involved in. And not necessarily from let me kind of, you know, scrutinize your skills around financial modeling. It's like, well, let me see if we connect.
Mm.
Do you fit into this culture? Do you understand that this isn't a multinational corporation where you've got an ivory tower gig? We get into the trenches. Like, I'll man a pre-sale booth, irrespective of job title, salary, pay grade.
Yeah.
I'm in a pre-sale booth. I'll fly, I'll market.
Yeah.
I'll do whatever it takes. And I think that's a difference between a true entrepreneur and someone that's like, well, I've got a corporate 9-to-5 CEO gig, right? Like, I want to stay in my office, send my emails and kind of manage from afar. That's not the way we run our business. And it never has been. We wouldn't have been able to get to where we are today in that short period of time by not comfortably being in the weeds, but more importantly, knowing what to do when you were there.
Mm.
And that's the beauty about someone climbing the ranks, or a business that's climbed the ranks from grassroots, right? When you start getting a private equity money on board and some decent levels of debt, you understand what's happening on the ground. And at least in franchising, that's what underpins a strong franchise network. Unit profitability. Happy franchisee, profitable franchisee is what underpins a successful franchisee network. And that, for us, is our wheelhouse, because we are profitable and happy franchisees as well.
And that is really when franchises start crumbling, right? Is when the individual gyms or the individual units start not making money. It's the beginning of the end.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's interesting. And so, obviously, for each stage and each level that you've achieved, and in the time we've known each other was, we were 8 years now, 7 years. Yeah, yeah. Every time, because, you know, we had the period when we first met and I was coaching you, and then we reconnected later for the accounting services, and now we're here. You've grown so much in your businesses. And obviously, each level, there's no way in 2012 you could have necessarily guessed that you were here. You knew you were ambitious and you knew you wanted to achieve a lot, but you didn't necessarily have the clear, I will be the master franchise of all of Asia. Or maybe you did, I don't know. But either way, it requires a bigger appetite for risk and ambition and success. So at what point do you see, like, most entrepreneurs get stuck? And how do you think you've been different in that you've just taken on more and more risk as you've become more ambitious? Because people are ambitious, but it's like they don't have the appetite for the risk that is required to get to that ambition.
Everybody wants to be a bodybuilder.
But no one wants to train legs.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I think in relation to the appetite to do more, I think obviously that's a key criteria, right? Yep. You've got to have that ambition coupled with the tenacity, as I mentioned previously, and the grit. But where I've seen a lot of entrepreneurs fail is the ability to execute. I think to execute on a business plan is very different to formulating a business plan. Mm. And in fairness, I come from a strong sales background. So even where my operational excellence fails, I know how to sell. And it's a nice kind of baseline or foundation to rely upon, because it's the first line in your P&L. Right. If you don't have that first line in your P&L, which is your turnover / revenue / income, a lot of the stuff below it doesn't really mean much, right? So I played well from very early days, from, you know, 2000, 2001 on that kind of revenue line. So I think to answer your question in relation to that journey, I think there needs to be more refinement and focus on execution, understanding what that is, how to do it, what skill sets are needed, and where possible, leveraging subject matter experts to help you. A lot of fitness entrepreneurs have got that, I want to do this, but I may not necessarily have the skill set. That's cool. Find someone that does. Learn from them. Find a mentor. Find an advisor. Maybe consider a partnership where you can find someone that fills the gaps that you've got. in relation to kind of the journey, like, well, did I expect to be here? No. But I knew very early on, since I was a kid, that I had this entrepreneurial bug. It was ignited more so when I'd finished high school and I had visibility. And the more I was exposed to the world of business, I knew I wanted to do more. And this is getting a little bit deep, but I'm going to go deep for the purpose of the audience. I came from a strong foundation of failure. I think a lot of people forget that when I tell my story. If I got 99.9 in the HSC and managed to get into New South Law Commerce and land a gig in Sydney with Linklaters or Allens or Ashurst, I may not be sitting here, but I didn't. I failed high school. I went to four high schools, full disclosure. I was expelled from two.
Oh, you were expelled?
I was expelled from two of the four. And I was a delinquent child. So I think coming from a foundation of I need to prove myself to my family, to myself, to the world, it was a huge rocket up my butt.
Mm.
And eventually over time, in my 20s, early 30s, mid 30s, now late 30s, that esteem was, it was calm, it was composed, right? I became comfortable in myself, in what I achieved. But looking at that, well, why is Luke doing this? Why is he going through this crazy entrepreneurial journey of doing more with less and more and more and more and more? And I think initially it's because I came from a foundation of failure. I wanted to do something more with my life because I wasn't happy with what I achieved. I felt like I had no excuse. I was given a golden ticket to do well in life and threw it away for the most part up until that kind of 99, 2000 mark. So I think that's an inner drive. I think that kind of indirectly answers your question. And then from that point until now, I think it's a matter of understanding the financial economics in in-depth way and honing in on those skills. So really like identifying early on what you don't know and again, filling those gaps. But one thing I think is important, and maybe it's not touched on enough, and you know, Australia's come a long way in relation to its awareness of mental health, but I knew very quickly if I wasn't focusing 100% on my health, physical, be it training with Lockie or going to CrossFit Active, which is why I met you guys initially, and my mind, I wouldn't be able to do this. Mm. I wouldn't be able to run 35, 40 businesses across three countries with more than 600 staff, still remain sane, be there for my wife, be there for my kids, be there for my friends. So full disclosure, every Thursday, I meet with a gentleman called Dr. Anthony Akuri. He started as a clinical psychologist for me in 2008 when I went through some challenging times. And our relationship flourished to be more of akin to a life coach, someone that can help me reframe, frame, pack, unpack, interpret, improve my communication skills, improve my ability to breathe, stay composed, stay calm, and be in a position where I can elevate myself above a situation, a problem, and look into it and assess it. The guy's amazing. I want to give a huge shout out to Dr. Anthony Akuri. He's in Drummoyne on Marlborough Street, I think 32 Marlborough Street, Drummoyne. I don't think without his help, I probably wouldn't be here as well. Like, he's given me the mental models and frameworks to ensure that this speed, this tenacity is underpinned by a very safe and sound mind.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if going back to the secret sauce question, I think a lot of people underestimate the level of mental grit you need to play at this level. And that's my secret sauce, my full disclosure.
Yeah, that's cool.
Hiring Lockie as a trainer.
There you go.
No, hold on. We did about five sessions. More of a friendship.
Yeah, that's how effective it is.
Yeah, that's how good it is. Yeah, so how have you, like obviously there was risk up until and there was, you know, problems, but then there was COVID and it's like, it's a whole different thing. I mean, you mentioned your revenues went almost to zero. How did you manage that process? Obviously, mentally, physically.
Yep.
What was that like?
Yeah, it was probably the most anxious period of my entire career. I was on the phone with multiple banks seeking relief due to financial hardship, both personally and business-wise, across multiple countries, including Australia. So high anxiety, high stress, and the solution at that point in time, honestly, was exercise. I doubled down on training. I signed up to CrossFit Actives. I don't think they use the word CrossFit in their name anymore. Actives Zoom sessions. So they had a Zoom offering, an online offering, which was 5:30 every day. So IT, my wife and I would set up a little laptop in the garage. We had some dumbbells from the gym and we took it out in the workout.
Mm.
There was a lot of stress at home. My wife was homeschooling our kids. We've got three kids under seven, so that's not an easy feat. We just bought a business for tens of millions of dollars in a region that I wasn't located.
Mm.
We had over 800 staff, or close to 800 staff at a management level and a club level. And to your point, everything had shut down overnight, with the exception of Taiwan. So 274 gyms in our network, including our own gyms, but for, I believe, 10 closed overnight.
Wow. And the revenue is pretty much nothing.
Zero. That's zero. So, and again, going back to the mental models, going back, if you didn't have that ability to not freak out,
yeah,
not stay composed, I'd probably be in a lot of trouble.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so you thought to yourself, like, okay, game plan, here's the problem. Let's zoom out. How can we make it through it? Let's create a plan rather than just throw your hands up and be like, this is
fine. Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, in fairness, I mean, I'm not giving enough kudos to the amazing team that stand behind me, right? I've got an entire team in Asia. I've got a strong C-suite base in Manila, Singapore. Two of my operational partners are now here in Sydney. We've got an amazing team. We're all fitness entrepreneurs. We've all got strong skill sets around the franchising space. And we had a game plan even before the pandemic hit in relation to how we were going to keep things alive, including pivoting to an online platform, making sure our franchisees had the ability to offer services and still render revenue or render services in exchange for revenue during this period. And it was about getting into the weeds with franchisees and not coaching them how to run their business, because there's no business to run. But it was about, how do we coach our franchisees to manage their operational expenditure? How do we teach a franchisee to speak to their landlord or their fitness supplier and say, Mr. Landlord, there's this thing called a pandemic and you're still charging me rent, right? How does this work? Let's have a conversation.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of that. There was a lot of hand-holding, coaching, mentoring, making sure that the guys knew how to manage their operational expenditure. And we've got a great support from head office as well, right? Our HQ, Anytime Fitness LLC, Self-Esteem Brands, Chuck and Dave, they're amazing through this entire process. Making sure they were there for us, but making sure we were okay, coming up with the right financial solutions to ensure that everyone survived, right? Because we're all in the same storm, right?
Mm.
Just different boats,
yeah.
Different requirements. But for the most part, there were some synergies with what we needed and what they needed. So there was a lot of collaboration around formulation of the right plans to get through.
Yeah. And so as things start to recover, what is your hope? Firstly, in the short term, and then long term, what are your ambitions?
Well, the good news is today, and hence the reason I can kind of take a bit of a morning off and have a coffee and catch up with you guys, business is good. We've opened 50% of our entire network.
It's awesome.
So we're well beyond break even from a master franchisee perspective, which is fantastic. Mm. So that means all of our gyms will be opening very soon. The last country to open was Philippines. Okay. It took a bit longer for it to get its act together in terms of how it was managing COVID. But we've just heard this week that this month, gyms, all gyms, including Anytime Fitness centers, are allowed to open.
And the very last is going to be Victoria. The most backwards state
of all. hopefully that can open soon.
Yeah, let's hope so. Yeah, and then long-term ambitions. How many gyms do you think is realistic for Asia in 10 years?
Yeah, so we're across 8 regions, right? You know, we're in Malaysia, Singapore, Thailand, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Macau, Philippines, Vietnam, and Indonesia. Currently, we have 224 franchises. We've got over 350 sold. We'd love to hit that 750 franchises open mark, hopefully within the next 5 years.
Mm.
Probably wouldn't be possible without Indonesia and Vietnam being within our portfolio now, but they're huge growth opportunity markets for us, especially Vietnam, where there's somewhat of a monopoly there with California. There aren't many strong competitors, both in small box and big box. So we're pretty excited. We've got our first club opening, hopefully late October. So that's the goal, just basically triple the base, but obviously hold on to that purposeful approach of, you know, let's get a platform into Asia where members, consumers, and the everyday Joe Blow can get fit, stay fit, both physically and mentally.
Mm. Yeah, that's awesome.
Sick.
So what's, like, kind of to wrap up here, there's one thing that has been interesting about your journey is that all the businesses that you've been a part of in the fitness industry haven't been anything that you have personally created. Now, I want to create a hypothetical scenario. You sell all this Anytime Fitness stuff, you cash out, you have as much money as you need to play with. Have you ever wanted to start anything in the fitness industry which is completely yours, that you completely synthesized from your own ideas and brought into reality and wasn't a franchise or, you know, someone else's initial idea?
That's a really good question. Full disclosure, I believe I'm better at taking an idea, be it a franchise or a license model from some other party, and running with it. I knew very quickly early on that I wasn't an ideas guy. I'm probably more of a left brain than a right brain thinker.
Mm.
So I can execute really well.
yeah,
amazingly well. That's my strength.
Mm.
Idea creation, formulation, not my wheelhouse.
Mm.
So I'd rather someone say, listen, look, I've got this concept. I've built the model. I need to go to market with it. I need to build a team around it. I need to underpin this with some strong operational excellence. I'm your guy.
Mm.
I'm your guy.
Mm.
But I wouldn't be able to come up with the idea.
Mm.
So if I was to kind of come up with $1 million one day in terms of what I would do, the only thing that would probably be my idea is I'd love to foray into psychology. I think dedicating the next stage of my life to mental health fully, as opposed to indirectly through gyms, is something that's on my cards in a big way.
Yeah, interesting.
So watch this space.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, there's a lot of opportunities that you have for people that potentially want to make their move into Asia. So I guess anyone that's listening to this right now, you still have this opportunity open for anyone that wants to invest in gyms and obviously be a part of what you're doing. What's the best place for them to reach you?
Yeah, sorry, it's a really good question. So thanks for reminding me. Like, I got so bogged down into the storytelling. I was having this deep and meaningful kind of nostalgic moment. Yeah, no, thanks for the segue. Just really quickly, so we run a managed services business for our gyms, and a large part of our franchisee network, believe it or not, at least 50% of our entire network are Australian.
Wow. Mm.
People don't know this. Right. So out of the 224 franchises in Asia that we run and operate and support, over 50% are owned by Aussies. The underlying shareholders, that is, right? So a lot of people in Australia have received an immense amount of passive income through this model, purely by investing in any type of fitness club, so they can say they're a franchisee, but they outsource the running of the gym to us or a managed service provider, of which there are a few in Asia, but we are the biggest and arguably the best. So if people are interested, if any listener is interested, they could definitely email myself in relation to that interest, and we can have a coffee and talk about it here in Sydney or in Australia via Zoom. And my email is luke@inspirebrandsasia.com.
We'll put it in the link of this episode, the link in the description of this episode.
And one question. So why would you get an anytime in Asia instead of Australia if you were Australian?
So I don't want to discount the ability to still purchase gyms in Australia.
Yes.
I love the Collective Wellness Group. I've grown with them for the last kind of decade. I will say that because Asia is a newer market and a growth market, there's just more to choose from.
Yep.
I think when you look at Australia as a market, I don't want to discount it again. I've cut my teeth on this market. It's paid dividends literally and figuratively to me and my family. But it is getting saturated, guys. Yes,
100%.
There is, I believe off the top of my head, maybe 4 24/7 players, more than 1,200 24/7 gyms, not including coach-led models, not including functional fitness studios, Pilates studios, low impact, high impact, lifting studios, CrossFit boxes.
Right? And not that many people.
Correct. Yeah. 25, 26 million, right?
Mm.
Yeah. So Philippines alone have got 120 million.
Yeah.
Indonesia's got over 250 million. So in terms of tackling a market where there's a low penetration rate, and sorry, just to give you a really quick stat before we finish.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed the time here, by the way. This is fantastic. It's a great opportunity to talk to you guys. But penetration rates in terms of people that go to some form of fitness facility in Australia, UK and America is high teens.
Wow.
Between 15 to 20% of the entire population. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Right? In Asia, so we're obviously a multiple of the populations that I've just mentioned in terms of the collective population for Asia, but it's sub 3%.
Wow.
So if you talk about markets that are ready and ripe for fitness generally, Asia's it.
It's astonishing. Yeah. It's like 1 or 2 in every 100 people have a gym membership.
Correct.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, crazy. It's nuts. And really what's helped you kind of indirectly is the rise of digital platforms like Instagram that are so visual that have helped the fitness industry, where people in Asia that have the freedom to have Instagram will look at people in Sydney or in Australia or in the meccas of fitness around the world and be like, I want to be like that. I want to be like this guy. I want to follow him. Whereas previously, you know, you didn't really have that connection to those people because, you know, if anything, it's like, oh, this is the Bondi crew, here's the LA crew, here's like, you know, the Miami crew, like look at these influencers here. And they trickle down in, and YouTube as well, they trickle down into that clientele, which is Asia and stuff as well. That's why why those markets have grown so much is because of their exposure is now in their pocket. It's not just the Ronnie Commons of the magazines, you know.
Correct.
It's like, it's everywhere now and it's customized to you and what you like. So it's really helped that market a lot because that's, I was that avatar at one point, you know, I was that person. So
Yep. I totally agree.
Fantastic. Luke, it's been a pleasure. I didn't know so much of that story, so it was nice to kind of put the pieces together, because it was you do so many different things and you pop up in so many different places that it's nice to piece it together. So thanks for that.
Full disclosure. Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate the time.
Awesome. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.